Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Now, today on ESPN Daily, it's the latest in our series called Essentials, sports stories you have to hear. In the early days of the Green Bay Packers, a mysterious fire broke out and may have actually saved the team, but was it set on purpose? That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. So we've talked a lot of Giants, a lot of Gettleman, a lot of where they go at four, but Rick, I feel like your Jets have been underserved lately for us here on the station, but that will not happen in the next 12 to 15 to 17 minutes.
Yeah, disrespectful. And I understand it.
I think it's actually a sign of respect. I think it's more that the Jets are probably more functional right now than the Giants are.
Currently more functional, I would say, yeah. I mean, what Joe Douglas has been able to do, and there is some, I mean, I would imagine some trepidation from you and Dave Gettleman, especially under the circumstances. And then on top of it, I mean, you just hired Joe Judge and you find out that Dave Gettleman is potentially on the hot seat.
Exactly. All right, so let's bring him in, the wonderful and talented Jets reporter for ESPN.com and 98.7. That is, of course, Rich Cimini. Rich, we hope you're doing as well as you can be in these very difficult circumstances.
And the same right back to you guys as well. I'm hunkered down here in the Long Island office covering the Jets these days. But, yeah, so how often do we say that the Jets actually look more functional than the Giants? That usually doesn't happen too often, does it?
No, not too often, but it feels like that's the case right now. And there's a lot of different areas to go with. And let me start with free agency, because I don't think we've really spoken to you since it's played out. Offensive line, he was very aggressive. No, I can't even say aggressive. He did a lot there, brought in a lot of bodies. Do you like what Douglas did in free agency, Rich?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, they didn't make the huge splash. I think there was a lot of speculation about Jack Conklin and Joe Thuney, and the Jets end up with, you know, more like second-tier offensive linemen, but they didn't spend outrageous amounts of money. The one guy where they splurged a little bit was Connor McGovern, so he'll probably be the starting center, you know, $18 million guaranteed. So that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a pretty good-sized contract. And the other guys are versatile-type guys. You know, George Fant can play left or right tackle. Right now he's penciled in at left tackle. And Greg Van Roten, who's a Long Island kid who's always dreamt of playing for the Jets, I'd say probably right now at right guard. You know, they made strides on the offensive line, but I wouldn't say this is a finished product by any means at this point.
Yeah, but, I mean, Rich, I mean, unlike the last couple of years, and I get it, you know, Mike's trying to save his job and had some, you know, splash free agent signings. We all realize that that's not the necessarily the right way to build your team. It just seems like Joe Douglas has attacked this with a clear plan, and he had a certain amount of money that he wanted to spend on each player. I mean, Robbie Anderson being a good example of that, and he stuck to that, which I really like. As far as Robbie Anderson is concerned, to your knowledge, did the Jets make a pretty legitimate offer to Robbie Anderson and he decided not to take it?
I don't know what the exact offer was. I know they valued him at about a $10 million a year player. That's the number they were looking at. You saw some reports of a four-year, $40 million contract offer from the Jets, which obviously he turned down to go for 2 years, 20 in Carolina. The four-year 40 doesn't include, you know, what's the guarantee? I mean, there could have been very little guaranteed money in that. With Carolina, he gets $12 million guaranteed. So Robbie, if he doesn't have a good year, he'll be on the market again next year because they'll cut him and he'll end up with a 1 year, $12 million contract. So the Jets didn't want to extend to that $12 million mark in the first year. And like you said, Rick, Joe has a very specific plan that he's following. He's got money points, you know, that he doesn't want to go over on these players, and he's sticking to it. It's very disciplined. I think it's a good approach. He also is doing that for two reasons. One, they didn't go into this free agency with a ton of money. Last year, you guys recall, it was like over $100 million in cap room. This year was about $50 million. So he's had to be a little bit more thrifty in terms of that. And also, most of these guys, I think the number is like 11 out of 14 of their signings are on one-year contracts, which is basically auditions, of course, but it also gives them a lot of long-term flexibility as well. So definitely a plan. Robbie Anderson didn't fit the plan in terms of money, and now they're going to have to find a wide receiver in the draft.
Rich, I'm reading ESPN.com and looking at this beautiful article that you wrote on Tristan Wirfs, the right tackle out of Iowa. Obviously, offensive line is going to be an area that the Jets look to address during the draft. Couple of questions. Is Tristan Wirfs the best offensive lineman out of the bunch? And secondly, is that the direction that the Jets are leaning with their 11th overall pick?
Yeah, I think Tristan is a top 10 player. I think he could go anywhere from 4 to 10. And is he the best? You know, this is a weird offensive line class because I think if you talk to 4 different GMs, you might get 4 different opinions. There's no clear-cut favorite. I think Tristan is probably the one or two. You know, Mekhi Becton from Louisville is very highly regarded. Jedrick Wills from Alabama. Those three are probably the best three, and you get a different order from depending on who you talk to. So I don't think Tristan will be there for the Jets. I think he'd be a really good pick for them because he can play right tackle. He can probably play left tackle as well. Some people think he's a better guard projecting into the NFL. So I think he'd be a really good pick for the Jets at 11. I just don't think he'll be there. I do think, Chris, that offensive line remains a priority for them. They still need some long-term answers at tackle. George Fant and Chuma Adoga are not going to get it done for you long-term. So I do think it's a possibility at 11.
Rich Simini, sorry, with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Iowa, Rich, has a long-storied history and tradition of developing or producing wonderful offensive linemen at the next level. Does that impact, do you think, guys in the NFL, they look at the Iowa contingents and say it's a factory of producing solid offensive linemen, and that helps a guy like Tristan Wirfs?
I think it does, because you know the guys are going to be well-schooled. Kirk Ferentz, who's been the coach there since 1999, has produced 17 NFL draft picks on the offensive line. And you guys have heard of, Marshall Yanda, who just retired from Baltimore.
Well, teammate, yeah.
Pro Bowls. Yeah, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer someday. And Brandon Scherff from Washington, another guy. And so Tristan's a little different from those guys, because those guys came in, and Brian Balaga, another one. Those guys came in as like 2 or 3-star recruits, like most of Iowa kids do, and they worked there, you know, they developed themselves into NFL players. Tristan came in as a very highly recruited guy, just a freakish type athlete. So, and he was really well schooled by an offensive line minded coach in Ferentz. So I think it definitely helps his NFL draft stock.
The great Rich Simini joins us here on the show. Rich, let me run something by you. Tell me if you like it, love it, or you hate it. I agree with you. I think offensive line still needs to be the priority. So tell me if you like this. You take an offensive lineman with the 11th overall pick. You address the wide receiver because of the depth at that position, especially with what you saw last year. I mean, in the second round, some of the wide receivers, Debo Samuel, the impact that they had in those second rounds, and this is supposed to be even a deeper draft at that position. And then here's the piece de resistance. Taking a page out of the Indianapolis Colts playbook, you trade next year's first round pick for Yannick Ngakoue.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's a great edge rusher. He's only 25 or 26 years old. The Jets, they did make an inquiry on Ngakoue. You know, I know that. I don't think they followed up, and I don't think there's any thought among the Ngakoue camp or the Jaguars camp that the Jets are going to be serious players in this. Because you're talking about a contract in excess of, you know, probably around $20 million a year. And I don't think the Jets want to do something like that. And I don't think Jacksonville would take a future number one where they want a current number one. So, you know, that's the
yeah, but Rich, wouldn't, I mean, but if you're Jacksonville, wouldn't you want to gear up? I mean, you're going to have, I mean, you could have Trevor Lawrence and you could have, I mean, you're going to have Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields next year at the quarterback position. I mean, that gives you the flexibility to go up and get a quarterback next year if you want one.
Yeah, but if there's a team offering you, pick a team in the middle of the first round. Say there's a team like around 20 or something. Like, say Seattle is offering you their first pick this year. I mean, you take the bird in the hand, you know. So
the
disadvantage for the Jets this year, because they're not going to give the 11th pick in the draft for Ngakoue. So they'd have to get creative and offer maybe this year's 2 and next year's 2, or like you said, a 2 this year and next year's 1, like that. So I don't think they'd be competitive with other teams who have better ammunition this year. And like I said, I also think the Jets wouldn't want to commit, you know, $50-60 million guaranteed to that kind of player. That I just don't think it's fitting in the Joe Douglas model right now.
Rich, and continuing to focus on the offensive line position group, is there any interest from the Jets in Trent Williams, the tackle from the Washington Redskins?
You know, that's a really interesting one, Chris, because the short answer is no, they don't. And they signed George Fant to be their left tackle. You know, it's a 3-year, $27 million. It's basically a 1-year, $9 million deal, so they can get out after a year pretty easily with minimal cap implications. Like we talked about earlier, there's probably a pretty good chance they're going to draft a tackle, if not in the first round, and maybe the second round. And so Williams, no, I do not see that. The only scenario, A, you're going to have to compensate the Redskins, probably with a second-round pick. And B, the player is looking for, you know, probably $14-15 million a year, and he's 31. He's had played in a year, and so that's another strike against it. However, say that they don't draft a tackle on the first day of the draft, and they're going into day two, and they still have some concern about the tackle position. Then maybe they pick up the phone to Washington and say, "Hey, what are you looking for? You know, we're interested in this guy." So I don't see it right now. You know, I was told that there's no immediate interest in Trent Williams, but perhaps, and I still think it's a long shot, maybe that changes during the draft.
Rich Cimini with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I don't imagine this happens, Rich, but I guess you never know. Jadeveon Clowney still out there and available. Is there any chance you think the Jets make a call and kick the tires on Clowney?
I think there's a chance there. That's more likely in terms of than Ngakoue or Trent Williams. There have been some speculation out of Seattle that the Jets have made an offer to confirm that. So what you're seeing there is obviously a player who's been, you know, got a couple of things dealing. Not a great year last year in terms of sack production, which a lot of teams look at. And also he dealt with a core muscle injury, and teams can't give these guys physicals now because of the restrictions, the COVID-19 restrictions. So that's really working against Clowney. I think from what I hear, he wants to go back to Seattle. He may end up taking a 1-year deal to go back to Seattle. But if I'm the Jets, sure, you know, I think you got to pick up the phone and investigate it, maybe make a 1-year prove it offer. You know, I don't know what that would be. I don't think he'd go to the Jets, you know, because of the scheme they play. I think he'd rather be a down lineman in a 4-3 like Seattle uses. But, you know, if you're the Jets, why not, you know, make a call and just investigate?
Rich Meaney joins us on the show. Last one for me, Rich. You know, you mentioned Joe Douglas sticking to a clear-cut plan, giving himself, you know, with these 1-year deals, some flexibility for next year. Any chance if Trent Williams, obviously because of the draft compensation, isn't an option, because of the relationship, Joe Douglas, is Jason Peters maybe potentially an option for a 1-year deal?
Well, that's, I think, more likely just because he is a free agent, so there wouldn't be any team compensation. It would just be paying the player. But, you know, I think they like what they have at tackle. I mean, I'm not the biggest Adoga fan, but I know the coaching staff thinks he has some good upside, and he's very athletic as a pass protector, and that's what Adam Gase is looking for in his scheme. It's a zone scheme. You really want athletic guys up there. So I think they like Adoga. They obviously like George Fant because they just signed him. So I think Jet fans, I've read on my timeline, you know, Peters and Trent Williams, I don't think they're thinking in that direction. I think the next move they make at tackle will be in the draft, you know, whether it's a Mekhi Becton or whether they wait to the second round to get it. I think that would be the next significant move at tackle, is getting a 21-year-old who doesn't make a lot of money and come in and develop him rather than reaching for a Jason Peters type guy who I think is 30, if I'm not mistaken.
Rich, we've talked about it before, the pressure on Adam Gase going into year two. With the NFL owners approving a new playoff format and expanding to 14 teams, does that put even more pressure on Adam Gase to make a push and get into the postseason?
Definitely. That and the fact that Tom Brady's gone, so he's out of the division. I think, you know, you have to look at, if you're one of the three teams that have been chasing the Patriots for what seems like 100 years, you absolutely have to put more pressure on yourself, and there's also more external pressure on those teams as well. So for sure, you know, second year of the program, player, you know, they kept their coaching staff intact, so it's not new systems. They have that continuity. You know, they have a quarterback who's got promise, who's been with the coach for a year now. You have a team that finished strongly last year, winning, what was it, six out of their last eight or something like that?
Six out of their last eight.
So you got that momentum. So, yeah, I mean, there is pressure on Adam Gase to get in the playoffs this year. It's been 9 years for the Jets. I know he's only responsible for one of those. But, yeah, for sure, for all those reasons.
All right, Rich. Well, listen, we appreciate a couple minutes. Rick, you're done, right? You said it was your last question, but I never know if that's accurate. You're done?
No, I'm done. No, okay. I'm gonna have some self-restraint. We'll have Rich on next week. I'm going to have some self-restraint.
Yep.
Keep a couple in the chamber.
3 weeks away from the draft tomorrow. It's amazing that it's so soon, but here we are, huh?
It's flying by. You know, we'll be talking to Joe Douglas a little later today. The writers will be talking to him, so it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say. You know, just updating us on free agency and how they're dealing with the highly unusual circumstances. So that'll be interesting as well.
All right. Well, Rich, we really appreciate it as always, and we'll talk to you soon. And stay safe, and best to your family.
Thanks. Same to you guys.
All right, good stuff. That, of course, is the gentleman that is Rich Cimini. He honestly is one of my favorite people in all of sports media. He's just a nice guy.
No, Dave, he's dialed into the Jets, and he has a knack for being able to search out the things that the organization is trying to do, the overall philosophy, direction of where the team is going. And the one thing that I'm really interested to see from that conversation that he has with Joe Douglas later today is how Joe Douglas plans on running the draft. Keep in mind, this is going to be his first draft as the guy, and the NFL is limiting the amount of people that are going to be allowed in the room to 10 people. So I'm really interested to see how Joe Douglas plans to navigate that for his first time around.
Now, it's interesting that Rich also said, Rick, that he doesn't expect Tristan Wirfs to be there at 11. I don't think there's any chance that Tristan Wirfs is going to be available to the Jets at 11. Do you?
No, I don't think so. I mean, after the combine, I mean, the fact that he's an offensive lineman out of Iowa. I mean, do yourself a favor. I mean, if you're a Jets fan, if you're an NFL fan in general, I mean, read Rich's article on Tristan Wirfs. I mean, if you have questions about, you know, what your kid should be doing, should he be playing strictly one sport, read this article. I mean, this kid, I mean, he's, I'm reading this thing. I mean, some of the things this kid was able to do, I mean, between riding his bike at 3 and then winning the discus. I mean, the kid was he's an unbelievable
athlete.
He's a freak athlete. He really is, which I love.
I love the fact that he was a state champion wrestler, class 2A. I mean, when you start talking about trench play in the NFL, offensive and defensive line, guys that understand how to use leverage, they end up winning more than they lose. So that's a tremendous advantage to be able to have an offensive lineman with that type of background.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like him for the Giants, I think, at 4 overall. And then McShay has Isaiah Simmons going to the Giants at 4, which, again, I like him. He's an athletic freak of a defensive player, but I think you need to protect your commodity in Daniel Jones. That's kind of my thought on this whole thing.
I think both local teams need to go offensive line and protect their young quarterbacks, but like Rich said, there's no consensus on who the best offensive tackle in this class is. I mean, you talk to one scout, it could be worse. Another scout thinks Becton. I think, you know, Thomas is probably the last one in that top group. But, I mean, I just look at those guys, Becton, Wirfs, Jedrick Wills from Alabama. I mean, those guys look like they're plug-and-play offensive tackles, a guy that you can pencil in for the next decade to be a starter as one of your tackles. There's a tremendous amount of value for a team, but I think the local teams in particular, just because you have young quarterbacks.
Yeah, the only thing that concerns me a little bit, because I think offensive line is where the Jets need to go as well, is that McShay, and I like Jerry Jeudy, and they clearly need a wide receiver, but I think he can find a really good wide receiver in the second round, is that, I mean, I don't know if McShay would do this, but you would imagine when you put out a mock draft, you want to be right on most of the things that you predict. I mean, McShay does have a really close relationship with Joe Douglas. So, is that something that he's heard, that they would go wide receiver with the 11th pick?
Could be. I mean, listen, Jerry Jeudy is going to be a stud wide receiver. The question is that more important than protecting the blind side of your quarterback? And for my money, I'd say you got to shore up the offensive line before you start, you know, supplying some of the weapons.
Here's how I would look at it, Dave. I mean, if the top two tackles on your board are gone by the time you pick the 11.
Which they will be.
To me, it makes it a no-brainer that you go Jeudy, and then you try to figure out your offensive tackle situation in free agency or via trade.
I wouldn't mind. I don't care how old Jason Peters is. I mean, you could use, I mean, there's, I think there's something to be said about the amount of leadership he would bring to that offense. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think Sam's the most vocal guy. I don't know. Someone like him, I think, would be a good fit for 1 year.
I like Jason Peters, but I love Trent Williams, especially if you're talking about only having to give up a second-round pick for him.
But then you got to pay him, too.
Yeah, I understand you got to pay him, Dave, but they got cap space. Who are the Jets paying? Who are they paying? They're paying C.J. Mosley. They're going to have to pay eventually Jamal Adams, but who are they paying big money? When you have
not
a quarterback on a rookie contract.
No, not a lot.
It just makes sense to go ahead and do that deal because you're talking about getting 4 or 5 good years out of Trent Williams, who I think is only 31 years old.
Yeah.
Here's what I would
do. Who hasn't played football also.
Here's what I would do. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I would do. I like Chris's idea. The one thing that would concern me a little bit, if you do want to address tackle in this draft, I think the drop-off from the top 3 or 4 tackles is greater than the drop-off between whoever you think the best wide receiver is and whoever you get in the second round. Would you guys agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So here's what I would do. I would sit at 11 and hopefully get an offensive lineman. If I can't do that and I end up with Jerry Jeudy, I've addressed wide receiver. Then what I do is second round, I pick up the phone, I call. If they say, hey, you know, we're not willing to do it, that takes Trent Williams out of it. I pick up the phone now and I call Jason Peters. I try to sign him to a 1 year deal. And I'm telling you, Jacksonville is going to want to have flexibility in next year's draft to try to get one of those quarterbacks. You'd think. I would try to trade for Yannick Ngakoue. You saw what Indianapolis just gave up for DeForest Buckner.
Yep. What, 13
Yannick
overall,
Ngakoue,
right?
He's 25 years old. Ngakoue.
So you would give up next year's one for Ngakoue.
Yeah, because you got to imagine. I mean, this should be a playoff team. So you had the Colts give up a 13th overall pick. I'd like to believe, maybe it's just, I mean, I'm just being overly optimistic that, you know, it's going to be, you know, somewhere in the middle to later in the first round. If you get Yannick Ngakoue, there's no edge pass rushers really in this draft outside of Epinesa and Chase Young, right?
There's certainly nothing
need edge
pass
at the
rush. Level of Ngakoue, that's for sure.
I don't know. I think I would, I mean, their defense is close. Especially with getting Mosley back and Avery Williamson back, if you can get someone that has that kind of impact rushing the quarterback, I mean, how much is that? Doesn't that make Quinton Williams better too? Doesn't that make your secondary
better? Of course, he's a dominant edge rusher.
I would try to do that, but that's just me. If the choice is him or take a flyer on Jadeveon Clowney, I would much prefer Yannick Ngakoue.
Well, he's a better player. There's no doubt about that. If you get Clowney, you're spending money. If you get Ngakoue, you're spending big commodity.
Are you spending money or are you? Here's the problem, though, Dave. Are you spending money or are you burning money? There's a difference.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not arguing with you that Ngakoue is way better a player than Clowney. But if I get Clowney, I'm spending, burning, whatever money. If I get Ngakoue, I'm mortgaging my future a little bit.
No, you're not. The future is now. Your quarterback's in his third year. I mean, at some point, you have to pay him. When are you going to have this kind of flexibility?
So you expect the Jets to be, or expect the Jets to compete for a playoff spot this year, right?
I think if they made the right moves, yeah. I mean, if you draft right, I mean, yeah, I think he could be. You should be.
Yeah, I think they need to be. I agree with you.
I mean, the division, I mean, with no Tom Brady, and I guess the Patriots, they love Jarrett Stidham. I mean, the fact that they traded away Hoyer and kept Stidham on as their backup would obviously lead you to believe that they do like him. I mean, I would probably take a flyer on Cam Newton if I was them, but that's just me. I think Buffalo's ahead of you, and Miami scares me a little bit. They absolutely scare me a little bit.
Yeah. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or your sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN, New York. Trying times, important to remember that we do, of course, pull together as a community. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you're a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com. Let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. I would imagine you're ready for some comfort food, Rick, at 11:35 in the morning.
Yeah, it seems about the right time, yeah.
Yeah, so I believe it's Melore, correct? M-E-apostrophe-L-O-R-E. We're going Melore?
Yeah, well said.
Okay, thank you. Located in Oceanside, New York, at 3303B Long Beach Road. They're now offering comfort food at its best with free delivery and takeout with curbside pickup as well. Open 7 days a week. And you can check out our hours, their hours, and menu at M-E-L-O-R-E, Melore, dot online, or call 516-766-1252. What's on the menu for you today? Anything sensational?
No, we had a baking extravaganza yesterday. I mean, she made a banana bread, and then we made a zucchini chocolate chip bread, and then she also made, because for some reason she bought like way too many bananas, she made a hummingbird bread, which is, it's banana, pineapple, and coconut with some walnuts. Delicious.
Really?
Delicious.
Banana,
oh, delicious.
Pineapple, coconuts, walnuts. I'd like to try that.
That's a little secret. That's a little secret touch. Like if you're making, like say a carrot cake, for example, or if you're making like this banana hummingbird concoction that she made, if you put a little crushed pineapple into it, like if you put a little crushed pineapple into your carrot cake, it gives it that like extra little sweetness.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
I like that.
Speaking of food, though, have you followed my Twitter timeline at all?
I don't know where you're going to go here.
Have you been creeping at all? I got my first my first eating challenge. Remember how I told you I want to be man versus food?
Is that the McDonald's one?
Yeah, you saw that one?
I have seen that being thrown around. You think you could do that? Tell everyone what's involved and how long you have to eat it.
All right, so you have 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So this was initially, the first time I saw it was because of Golic, Mike Golic Sr. This was, I think it was tweeted by Trevor Donovan, was the first one I saw it. It said, somebody offers you $3,500 to finish everything on this tray in 90 minutes. So from what I can tell, it looks like four double cheese. I can't tell if the other one's a double. There must be a double cheeseburger. So four
double cheeseburgers.
I think they're four double quarter pounders. I think those are quarter pounders because they got the sesame seed bun. So I'm going to go four quarter pounders. Two large fries. You think those are 20-piece nuggets or 10-piece nuggets? It's more than 10. I can't tell how many nuggets. Two whatever it is nuggets, and then it looks like four medium, I want to say. Medium or large. Maybe large. Probably large. Large sodas.
Four
in
sodas.
90 minutes.
It looks to me, and I just brought this up here, it looks to me like those are... Now, there's more than one nuggets, right? It looks
there's
like
two nuggets. I just can't tell how many nuggets are in each one. I think there's more than 10 in each one.
There's definitely more than
10.
There's absolutely more than 10. I would say, so let's, for argument's sake, let's say they're 15. You're looking at 30 nuggets.
Yep.
Four quarter pounders.
Double quarter pounders, yeah.
Two large fries.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said there's four sodas?
Four sodas, yeah.
Ugh. I have no doubt that you could do this.
Yeah, you're going to dominate that, Rico.
I could destroy that.
90 minutes is a very long time.
That's not a challenge for you.
I think I'm going to go ahead and say that is a 20 piece.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. I think you could do it in less than an hour.
But you're given 90 minutes.
Yeah, but the key is, no, but see, here's where you get into some trouble. And having done the 5-pound sandwich with the pitcher of Diet Coke in 20 minutes, it's like when you attack a buffet, right? Like if you attack a buffet slowly, then you kind of try to pace yourself and take your time. All of a sudden, if you give yourself too much time, the food hits your stomach and you're full.
Mm.
If you gorge yourself quickly, your stomach doesn't realize it's full yet. So you got to get, I mean, the early pace is huge. Like you got to get through it in a hurry.
Chris, I think you could do it also.
Yeah, I'm sitting there trying to go through it through my head and strategize about how I would approach it. I think I would have to try to knock out a double quarter pounder and a nugget in the first half hour. And then right around that second half hour, take out the second quarter pounder. And then after that, you're just talking about the nuggets and two large fries and the sodas left. I think that's something I could handle.
Yeah, I think both.
Well, the key is, here's the other key too, though. I mean, this is when it starts to get a little bit gross, but bear with me, is that, and I would enjoy every single bite, but if I'm taking this thing serious, what I'm doing is I'm taking two patties, at least two patties out of one of the quarter pounders. In eating those without bread. Probably four without bread.
You have to eat the bread.
No, but I'm going to wait for the bread. I don't want the bread to all of a sudden just sit in my stomach.
So you're going to save some of the bread towards the end.
Well, just think. I mean, if you're eating the bread and then you got to drink the four sodas, what is that bread going to look like when you pour the soda on it? It's going to be this big, giant, you know, ball in your stomach.
That's why you start with the food and you kind of take it easy on the sodas early on, right?
Yeah, and when I did the five-pound sandwich, I mean, the problem, too, I got into was you get sick of chewing. It's like you're doing so much chewing that your jaw starts to get a little bit tired. But, I'm 100% certain that I would
I think if Vegas had odds on this, you'd be minus 350.
But I have no doubt that I would hate myself after I got done.
Oh, you wouldn't feel well.
No, you get the meat sweats. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't feel awesome, but I finished it.
No doubt that both of you could get it done. All right, speaking of getting it done, let's go to Andy and Merrick, who calls us with the trivia every day. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
Good morning, guys. You all killed it yesterday, so I've upped the degree of difficulty on your question.
Great.
Now, here we go.
Chris, we're going back to your alma mater, University of Virginia.
Let's do it.
You've produced a lot of good running backs. Can you tell me who holds both the career and single-season rushing marks for the UVA Cavaliers?
Oh, that is a tough one.
He's probably an accountant now.
I'm going to guess career is Thomas Jones.
You would be correct. He has a single season and career.
Yeah, he was a first round pick in, what was that, 99, 2000, something like that? 2000.
Yeah, he was a high pick.
First round pick in 2000.
Top 10, I believe.
Yeah.
All right. Rick, goalie question.
Okay.
You are well aware that Ron Hextall is the all-time leader in penalty minutes for goalies. But can you tell me what American-born goalie holds the most penalty minutes?
What American-born goalie? I had a lot of penalty minutes, but I don't think I didn't play long enough to have the most. Ron Hextall,
I think I know this
animal.
One. I think I feel confident about this one.
You think you know this one?
I could be wrong. I think so. Can I help him?
No,
but
I don't want to help.
First, and then he'll phone a friend to you.
I believe he played a very long time.
He did?
A very long time.
Played a very long time. American-born. I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with a fellow lefty. I'm going to go with Tom Barrasso.
You are correct.
Yes.
Oh, my God. You guys are 2-2.
That is correct.
Yeah, now
he
you're going to ask
too.
Me this ridiculous
Barrasso was
question.
Feisty.
Just parenthetically, you are number 4 among American-born goaltenders in penalty minutes.
Nice.
That's great. That's one of those stats that you want to have.
And number 31 overall, just if you were inquiring.
That's
all
like,
right,
it's David. By the way, just quickly to add to that what you just said, Dave, I think you know the story. Canty definitely knows this. So when I was interviewed at the draft by the Atlanta Thrashers, who had the second overall pick, they asked me, the GM, Don Waddell, said, you know, if you could achieve one thing in the NHL, what would it be? You'd think I'd say Stanley Cup. Maybe if, you know, you're being a little bit selfish, you say a Vezina. Guess what dummy says?
What did you say?
Score a goal.
Yep.
He's such an idiot.
Which you did not do, right?
Score a goal. No, I didn't score one.
Okay.
I'm a failure. I'm a colossal failure.
No, stop it. All right, Andy. So we've hit 5 in a row as a show.
Well, it's going to end right here.
Great.
We're not giving you a Giants question. We're not giving you a gimme.
Great.
Hockey, you know that Tiger Williams is the all-time penalty minutes leader. But can you tell me what man inducted into the NHL Hall of Fame has the most penalty minutes?
Rick, do you know this?
Do I know this?
This is career, right?
Career. So guys like Tiger Williams, Ty Domi, McSorley, all great penalty minute guys, but none of them in the Hall of Fame. What Hall of Famer has the most?
Rick, I'm thinking Chris Chelios.
Mm.
You think that could be one?
Chelly played a long time. I mean,
because Berube's got to be up there, but there's no way he's a Hall of Famer.
Berube is not a Hall of Famer, no. You are correct. Berube is not a Hall of Famer.
It could be Scott Stevens.
No, I don't like it.
No?
Mm-mm.
I'm trying to think who else. Now, they don't have fight. Like, Bob Probert and those guys are not in the Hall of Fame, right? Even for their fighting prowess?
No. Probert is not in the Hall of Fame, no.
How about Rick Tocchet?
Tocchet is not in the Hall of Fame.
He's not in the Hall of Fame? I'm going to go Chelios then.
Chelios had 100 more than Scott Stevens. Again, you guys are 3 for 3.
That's right.
Nice, Dave.
That is correct.
Oh, God, that felt good. Yeah.
We really are sensational. Thanks for the call, Andy.
Stay safe, guys.
All right, appreciate it. By the way, I don't know if you guys enjoy that. I love that segment. That little.
You're a savant. Well, you love it because you're, I mean, it really highlights. I mean, he just asked you a hockey question. And I mean, you're spot on.
Well, you helped me, though.
I didn't really, I mean, I helped you with, I mean, easy helps. I mean, that's, these guys aren't in the Hall of Fame, but that, I mean, dude, I can't even tell you how impressed I am right now. Like, I
really?
Mean, what's in your, because that's like, with all the sports that we have to watch, all the names we have to know, like all the things that every single day, like you need to study up to make sure if someone asks you a question, you would know. Like at a certain point, you'd think like you get like some stuff has to be pushed out. Like Canty and I have to push stuff out to bring new stuff in.
No,
like, you just retained all of this.
No, so you don't understand. My entire brain power is used towards sports. I can't, I don't know how to mow a lawn. I can't change oil. The common person can do all these things that I'm completely incapable of doing. But if you call me and ask me something about sports, that's my wheelhouse. That's what I know.
It impresses me though. It does.
I'll take it.
I mean, you know every sport though. Like there are plenty of people that are probably on equal footing. Maybe two of the four sports or sometimes three of the four sports. But I mean, even the names that you're bringing up. It's impressive, man.
No, I'll take it. I appreciate it. Schools, of course, will survive and communities will thrive. But for student athletes who have lost their senior seasons due to this pandemic, 98.7 ESPN would like to salute you for accomplishing great achievements in scholastics and athletics. Here's what you do. Email us at 987ESPN@gmail.com. Tell us your athlete story, and we will do our very best to share those stories. Like Allison Kincaid of... I guess it's Juniata, J-U-N-I-A-T-A, Juniata College Lacrosse Team. Allison's a senior captain for Division III Juniata College Lacrosse in Huntington, Pennsylvania. The team was in its third year as a program and had just started their season. Allison will be graduating with a degree in biology, unfortunately for her and the other three seniors. The season came to a sudden end while finishing their spring trip to Florida several weeks ago. Thankfully, the team returned before things got too bad and everyone returned home safe and healthy. So, Allison, our hats off to you at the end of what sounds like it was a terrific, terrific college career. 800-919-3776. I don't know. To me, this is such a bothersome story, Chris. ESPN's Jordan Renan reports that DeAndre Baker apparently fell asleep during meetings often in his rookie campaign. Baker's rookie season was rocky, to say the least. At one point, he got called out in a team meeting and his 7 touchdowns allowed as the nearest defender was tied for 4th in the NFL per Next Gen Stats. There are questions about Baker's desire to be great. Sleeping in meetings was not uncommon at all for him. I mean, they traded up to get this guy, Chris. They traded up to get him.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. I mean, talent is not enough in order to have success in this league. You have to have attention to detail, and that's one of the things that clearly was lacking in DeAndre Baker's rookie campaign. And when you have an offseason like the one that the players are going through right now, when you don't have any structure, when you don't have the offseason program, when you don't have OTAs or minicamp, it doesn't bode well for a guy like DeAndre Baker that doesn't have the formula in terms of knowing the things that you need to do in order to have success as a pro. You just can't rely on your athletic ability in this league. And that's what worries me a little bit about DeAndre Baker going into year two.
But does it surprise you? I mean, with what you saw on the field from him.
No. Surprised the article doesn't say he was sleeping during games at some different points.
But you could see that with your own eyes.
Yeah.
And have to report it. No, I mean, with some of the miscommunications, and I mean, I heard a lot of people, I mean, at the time, you know, blaming James Betcher, he should teach it up better. But I mean, there were clearly, I mean, you had, you know, there were plays where you had one corner was playing one kind of coverage and the other corner was playing a completely different coverage. And you're like, what the hell just happened? I mean, it was ugly.
So
makes more sense now.
Let me ask you guys this. We'll start with you, Rick. Is this something that's like a rookie, immature kid can change from year one to year two, or is this kind of who he is?
No, I think it can change. I mean, but that for me is clearly a lack of leadership inside the locker room. I mean, it's, yeah, the coach will say something, but it's more powerful coming from the players inside that locker room. I mean, so it's a young secondary. I get it. But that's when, you know, an Antoine Bethea. And I mean, one of those guys has to step up and hold that young kid accountable and teach him what it means to be a pro. And falling asleep in meetings is not what it means to be a pro.
But here's the thing. When you're leaning on a guy like Antoine Bethea to provide leadership, he's got to go out there and ball himself. And seeing as how he's in the latter stages of his career, it's going to be hard to have that message come from him, because as a young player, it's going to fall on deaf ears. The guy's telling you to do it a certain way, but he can't go out there and play as well as you can play, then that's a problem. So I think the addition of James Bradberry should help a little bit in terms of being able to provide that leadership from somebody that's being paid well to be a number one corner. But, I mean, this is one of those things that you have to rely on the scouting report and the getting to know the kid in the pre-draft process in terms of being able to determine his sports character. I mean, you got to decide whether or not that kid – whether it's his goal to be the best that he can be, or is it just his goal to get to the NFL? Now, I don't know DeAndre Baker. I can't speak to that. But you do want guys that want to become the best that they can be and get the most out of their potential. And you have serious questions about whether or not that is DeAndre Baker.
Yeah. And you know what? I wouldn't be so bothered if it felt like he just wasn't committed. Like, I don't mind the fact that he played a ton as a rookie and was bad for oftentimes during his rookie season. What bothers me so much about the story is the lack of focus and the lack of detail and the lack of seemingly caring that he took to his rookie season.
Yeah, I mean, it should piss you off. I mean, it's one thing to go out there and just be that much better than everyone else, and you can fall asleep in meetings and then go out and play, you know, at a high level on...
Lawrence Taylor used to fall asleep in meetings all the time.
Well, there are plenty of guys. I mean, there are plenty of really talented guys that could, I mean, we talked about Chris Chelios the other day. I mean, they can burn it at both ends, and Michael Jordan, they can burn it at both ends and go out and be the best player on the floor, best player on the ice. That's not who DeAndre Baker was this season. I mean, he was a liability, to say the very least. But this is the risk you run when you let all the veteran guys walk out of your locker room. It's the risk you run when you let Landon Collins leave. Mm-hmm. I mean, who's in that locker room that's going to be the leader on the defensive side of the ball?
No one. You mentioned Antoine Bethea, who's just not a good football player at this point.
No, I mean, he's probably, I mean, Chris hit right on the head. I mean, nailed right on the head. Is, I mean, you have to be a leader and to be able to get in someone's face and hold them accountable. I mean, your play has to speak volumes. And Antoine Bethea was not, no. I mean, wasn't one of your better defensive players last year.
No, it was a pamphlet was the book on Bethea last year. DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.